Let's begin with acknowledging this abiding presence that is here, this abiding presence within our very self and within life. And as we acknowledge this presence, we recognize the universal love, that innate wisdom that is here in our soul, and this innate oneness. So take a deep breath in through your nose, out through your mouth, feeling as you breathe in that you're opening yourself in awareness of this presence, and as you breathe out, you're allowing yourself to relax deeply into this which is here. You're letting yourself open, and you're letting yourself in. As you breathe in this moment, allow yourself to notice the awareness that here, underneath life's events, underneath the thoughts, the questions, the circumstances, is simply this essence of beingness, this awareness. Allow yourself just to gently yet clearly recognize this presence and this essence that is yourself here now, and this which is always here in the now. As you recognize this, notice its clarity. It's calm and openness. It is not the thoughts. It is not circumstances itself. It is that which simply remains clear and open, engaging. Notice the power of observing that is here. Here is the seer, the one who is simply seeing life. as you notice this openness, this calm. Allow yourself to breathe into its innermost essence. Feel how deep this essence is. That it goes deep and deep into your innermost being. Yet at the same time is all open, all expanding. It has no boundaries. Hear this awareness is that presence which is all connected, all peace, all aware. Take a deep breath into your innermost essence as you feel this calm, clear, centered awareness. Gently affirm to yourself, I am here. Breathe in deeply as you feel and experience this nowness. Noticing yourself simply as this. Here, energy is all connected within this awareness. And here, pervading this presence, this awareness, is a gentle but powerful love, a deep, timeless wisdom. A strength and a gentleness. Here now, you allow yourself to simply be present as this. Take another deep breath as you feel yourself centered and aligned in this moment, simply being here, open and aware. In this openness, feel your body, the form simply here, seated, calm, connected. Feel yourself receptive, being open to yourself as this presence that is awareness. Being open to life as this presence that is love. Feel the grace that is available within you and all around you now. And breathe with this deeply. Feel it flowing through your being as you feel this centeredness and openness. As you feel this depth of presence, take a moment to give thanks for being here, for being open to this which is self in awareness and love. With this gratitude now, breathe into your body, feeling yourself centered and open. Feel the energy flowing through your form, through your aura, connected in this space, connected here in the now. And take another deep breath as you gently stretch, wiggle your toes and fingers, and slowly open your eyes. Namaste. Welcome. My deepest acknowledgements for you all. With love, with respect, and with gratitude that we're here to share in presence, in openness, to acknowledge our true self, to invite ourselves to open to all that we are, and in doing so, to invite this grace into every dimension of our life. I feel actually this is one of the primary reasons that we do come together. We feel drawn to sit in company and to share in truth, to share in the power of meditative awareness, heart awareness, because actually we all in our own way wish to extend a deeper sense of grace and love and peace and calm into every dimension of our life, and that it oftentimes seems very challenging to accomplish that, and particularly to sustain that. One of the greatest challenges of the human experience is to dance with this drama, the play of life, without getting caught up in the duality of it. And okay, we might consider different perspectives of what that means, that ultimately, sure, in ultimate terms, there's no duality. Yet if we look at our human experience, clearly it is being encountered through the perception of duality. And it seems to be this that causes the greatest sense of conflict and the greatest sense of complication. That life seems to be incredibly complex or complicated to many, particularly as we see at this time here on Earth, we are ever more involved in a more and more complex life, busier, more information to digest, to process, more choices to make, more people to encounter, more circumstances to encounter. There's just so much that is being digested and referenced, and so much that one is encountering in every moment. And of course this indicates the degree to which as people we can be so lost in that perceptive state of duality, and that we forget the importance of stepping back to that space of our being that really truly is so simple, and yet in its simplicity is so sure, is so powerful, is so clear, it is so true, it's so free of our confusions, our uncertainties, our fears, our doubts. And when we do connect with this presence in ourself, we are able to step back from what we've seen as the complexities and acquire a different view, a different perspective, something that comes from a deeper poise, a deeper awareness in our being. Otherwise, we're looking for those answers everywhere else. And fundamentally, that's because of that loss of connection in oneself, a loss of that trust in oneself. And I just see continuously the extent to which humanity at large and individuals in every single day are challenged to feel a sense of clarity, to feel a sense of knowingness within themselves. And because of that sense of, or a lack of that connection to a knowingness or a certainty in oneself, there's this blind struggle. There's a great amount of confusion. There's a great amount of grasping. There's a struggle to somehow grasp on a knowingness from somewhere else, from someone else. And of course, along with that comes an abdication of our own responsibility and an abdication of a recognition of our own capacity too. And we tend to lose sight of how powerful we truly are, how capable we truly are, and that actually every response arises from this inner essence of our being. Every response. Either it is going to get filtered through layers of conditions and this entanglement in our perception of duality, or it's going to come through a clear axis of our being. That's it. Either we are clearly centered in that axis of our self that is aware, or we're just viewing life through this great tangle of conditions, and everything's filtered through that. We're assessing our life through that. We're constantly tipping and turning from yes to no, to right to wrong, good, bad, it's okay, it's not okay. So life seems profoundly complicated and confusing and challenging. Now the irony is that we actually are here to experience life in a degree through what seems dualistic. So we are here to experience life through this unique individuality. Yet if we do not maintain that connection to our transcendent self, the one that is not this identity, the one that is not a specific definition, if we don't maintain that connection, we get lost in the bits and pieces. We get lost in that collection of definitions, of ideas of what's right and wrong and what's okay and what's not okay. And consequently, the more we do this, actually the more complicated our life becomes. And of course, the more complicated life becomes, then the more difficult it is to simplify, to step back into that space which is so simple. I mean, even to say it's simple is really diluting the truth of this presence. It's beyond simple. It is just so clear. It is so pure. It is so whole, so sure, so absolute, so true in its own beingness. You can't get any more simple. And that actually is the power of love. If we understand our essence and awareness from a place in our being, we understand that actually in love nothing is complicated. It is only in fear that things are complicated. It is only in the mind and conditioned ideas that anything is complicated. So when we come back to our essence, our essential self, we come back to love, we come back to that connection, that attunement, if you like, to our true self, which really simply is love. And along the way, when we feel things are complicated and we're trying to understand how to approach our life, how to negotiate our way through so many different circumstances and so many different challenges, it pays to remember this truth, that love reveals all truths, that everything grows in love. Everything comes into a state of harmony and clarity in love. When we align ourselves with love, when we invite ourselves to see, to feel, to respond with love, everything is simple. Everything is simple. For example, when we see a life situation that perhaps we've wanted something, maybe in some moments we get that. In those moments we feel it's okay. But the moment we're presented with a situation where life says, no, you're not going to have that way now, you don't get what you want, what happens? Suddenly it's apparently not okay, but actually what has happened is a crucial junction in your being. And that crucial junction means either you are going to maintain that axis of your true self, which is love, that you are love, all is love, the universe is perfectly arranged in love in every moment, or you're going to take the axis of dualistic perception and project that interpretation onto the universe, which is, I don't get what I want. I can't have what I want. Now, if we remain in love, we actually see that to the ego, maybe we're not getting what we want, but in ourself and in the universe, we are being provided with exactly what is perfect, ordained, exactly what is needed and necessary in the perfect order of the universe. If we maintain ourselves in love, we then see, I'm not getting what I thought I wanted in that moment. There is a perfectly good reason for that. Thank you, universe. It's not complicated, is it? If we maintain that axis of love, there is no conflict. There's a recognition, actually, of the perfect order of everything in every moment. So whilst we may look to someone else, or we may look to circumstances to bring the answers or to rearrange themselves for us to feel okay, all the while we are the one actually determining our experience. All the while we are the one that is setting up that experience. Let's go back to this example of being in love and saying, okay, that's not happening clearly for a perfect reason. Or that's not happening, I don't get what I want, I'm not getting what I want. Now, what's actually going to happen in the instance you adopt that interpretation? Because that's all it is. It's an interpretation. It is not a response to the universe as it is. What's going to happen in the moment you're at that junction and you take that split? Instead of staying here in this axis, you take that split into its either okay according to your conditions or it's not okay according to your conditions, which of course you project onto the universe because you haven't got it the way you want. No, it's not okay. So what is your created experience going to be? Exactly that. I don't get what I want. Exactly that. Not that you're not getting, but that you don't get what you want according to this split. That's all. And of course, the nature of the human psyche is to actually seek a state of integrity between what you perceive to be your inner state and outer reality. That means you are going to set up self-validation that I don't get what I want, because you have to maintain an integrity state between what you believe in here and what you're seeing out there. So you're just going to constantly set up this feedback loop of circumstances through which you will again project this interpretation, because there you are at the junction again. And so it will go on and on and on. As long as you are looking in that way or responding to life in that way, it will just be a never-ending series of those situations, a fight between getting what I want and not having what I want. Now, if we look at the cause of that and we understand that that arises the moment we depart that center which is love, there really is only one response, isn't there? And that is to go back in. Yet mostly what is it that people do, or perhaps you've even observed yourself doing in life? What do you observe yourself doing in life? Mostly. Trying to... Who's... Yes? So you're saying for yourself you observe, you're trying to control it. Trying to change it. Mm-hmm. So instead of recognizing that signal that it's a misplaced state of your being, for example, you actually keep chasing it further and further. Why? If that resulted in that state of conflict to start with, why are you going to continue that same behavior? You know, that's actually a great response, because in truth that's exactly what happens and will happen anyway. Either the universe will reflect back to you in a way that you're receptive enough to see from a different perspective, or you will get to a point that you are suffering enough that you will change your perspective. That's it. There's only two options if you keep following that same route. My intention in sharing this space is to invite the first option, which is that here together we can recognize these habituated behaviors we've adopted collectively. This collective mind of humanity has adopted these behaviors. We've validated it as if it is real. We discredit what actually is real, the power of love, the power of oneness, that we actually are one, and that within us is a power of truth that is unquestionable. We have the audacity to ridicule that, to oppose that, until eventually either we have a moment, like I say, we're receptive enough to expand our awareness and drop into a different state, which actually is aware self rather than perception, or we collapse through our suffering until we see truth is its own being. Oh, it simply is truth. And the moment you get that truth, do you think you could do anything to convince anyone else of that truth? Can you actually explain it? Pardon? You can model it? Right, we can give some kind of reference to help us begin to enter into that, to make a connection with that. That's what's going on here with these words, with this sharing. There's a degree of a model. So, beautiful example and reference. Nonetheless, ultimately, we can't put our entire faith in that. We have to come to that experience ourselves, don't we? And in that experience is the absolute knowingness. For example, you know, if you have a pain in your knee, can you convince anyone else that you actually have a pain in your knee? How do you explain it? You are experiencing it. It is its own truth, right? In the same way, your true nature is its own truth. It's not something ultimately that can be explained. But because we're so fixated about this particular point, because we're so stuck in the mental realm, we're so fixated about this point that we have to explain something clearly enough to trust it enough, we actually maintain this rift. Sometimes it's only subtle, other times it's very obvious. But that rift is there. And until we ourselves take the leap into that rift, to go deeper into that place that maybe we still doubt, maybe we're still afraid of, because we've lost that intensity of familiarity with it. But until we do that, there's still going to be a shade of doubt, a shade of question. The one who wants to debate it still. And that one who wants to debate it still is the very one who abdicates that truth. The very one who abdicates that power of response. And through certain experiences, we do begin to recognize more and more readily that truth really cannot be explained. As much as, yes, there's the opportunity for certain models that invite us into that space, that do invite us to follow the direction that it's pointing, to somehow go in there ourselves. As much as we have that, like I said before, we actually can't rely on the model itself. We can't rely on the explanation itself, because the explanation is still tied to that part of us that is in a rift, that part of us that is not connected actually to the experience. And here is one of the most extraordinary paradoxes of truth. That actually the true nature of ourself, of life, the laws of the universe, are so beyond definition, so beyond explanation, that they truly are a mystery. And yet the moment we surrender our explanation and we enter into experience, it is no longer a mystery at all. It is an absolute awareness, an absolute knowingness. It simply is what it is. But there's the shift. Either engage with the experience or pursue the explanation. That's all. Yes, beloved.
It would take work to keep on doing this every time it comes up?
Well, in a sense, yes. The work refers to that aspect of human nature which is habitual. You have become so habituated with this way of responding to life. It is like a default setting. So, yes, in a sense, there is work. It takes a degree of determination and vigilance and cultivating this power of witnessing, this power of observation, to even notice yourself reverting back to those same subconscious patterns. Which is why once you start recognizing the value in coming into stillness, coming into presence, coming into that dimension of your being where you are connected in that silence, just in pure awareness, why it is so important you cultivate that as a regular experience. Because in a sense that counterbalances this inclination for you to fall back into that subconscious habit. So in that respect, we can call that the work. We can call that a conscious response. What we see is actually a point of choice. Once we have enough awareness to recognize that point of choice, then it is up to us to cultivate our application to that. And that brings me to an interesting point, commitment. That actually it is about a commitment to that truth in ourself, a commitment to that yes in ourself. Commitment is not a word, it's an action. Commitment is not a thought, it is an action. What do I mean by that? It is an aware response. It's about aware response. So that's the power of invitation. Once we observe these consequences, that either we're in that axis of love, we're capable of simply observing and responding to the true nature of life, which means then we're just experiencing life as it is, or we lose that power of alignment and our response actually becomes a reaction. And don't we know that's the primary substance in what we call the spiritual work or self-development? You know, revolves around that, recognizing the power of response or reaction. And I guess my reference to the what you don't want is the more obvious point of recognizing that behavior. The more deeply we recognize that behavior, the more clearly we see I want, I don't want are actually two faces of the same conditioned coin. And, you know, they're ultimately taking us around and around in what Tibetans call the wheel of samsara. You know, we're just chasing after that constant temporal experience to feel comfortable, to feel okay about our life, when actually both sides are keeping us in this drive around something that is conditional. Yes, down here.
In the it's specific channelings by somebody like Esther and Jerry Hicks, where they talk about focusing your attention on specific things, and that's you'll attract what you put your attention to. Where does this fit with all of this? Because do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of talk in the spiritual world about what you focus on, you create, and et cetera, et cetera. So I've got my own take on it, but I just thought I'd ask you.
Look, it opens up a really interesting lot of reflections, I guess, because we can look at it from so many different layers of our humanness, and that in in the ultimate universal terms, well, we're already everything. Everything that we ever have been is, or ever will be, is already here. So actually, really, we're not determining our experience. We've already manifested it. That's in ultimate terms. At this human level of perception, we assume this reference point of choice around what we respond to in life. And according to that, we actually mirror, in correspondence to that, our state of being. So it's not even that we're actually attracting it, because now I'm going to think positively and I'm going to be abundant. So, oh, bing, now I attract positivity and abundance. But actually, that as we align ourselves more and more deeply to our authentic state, we are in a state of harmony. Now, in that true state of harmony, actually we are abundant, and it is not conditioned with attachments or expectations. So we don't even have the drive to have to say, I'd better think positively so I can attract this into my life. That is coming from still a degree of a conditioned view about our life and an attempt to control our life. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have some relevance in that, as I said before, if we do keep splitting off into conditioned perspective, then of course that is the experience we are going to generate, because we are going to interpret our life exactly that way. So really the experience is not reality itself. It is our interpretation around what we are defining as reality. And we're just playing these complicated mind games with that, because we don't actually have alignment to the universe as it is, you know, when those mind games are going on. That's why. Because there is still not that innate oneness or trust in life in all its aspects, in absolute terms, that it all is perfect. There is still prejudice. There is still bias running one's interpretations and approach to life.
And so that's where we just continue to come back to center, to love. And we can still say, I am abundance,
sure,
feeling divine or whatever. Sure. But it's what we need to be aware of is whether we're interpreting and creating a story around that, or whether that's just coming from pure trust and love of that intention. Like,
yeah,
we could use it to... I mean, I'm just thinking about, on my way here, I left home quite, you know, separated, but I used some of those words, not with attachment, but as centering to...
So you mean like a sense of realigning yourself to just that true nature of the universe.
Exactly.
Beautiful. That's a beautiful example of how you can actually draw on things that could split you off to actually really recenter yourself. You know, this whole sense around trusting the universe absolutely as it is why we're still seeing so much conflict in the world today. Because there's been such a lack of that alignment to our abiding self, our, you know, we may call that the transcendent self, this essence which is not the moment, the event, the definition, it's just, it's our beingness, it's our eternal beingness. We've lost such connection with that. We're so out of touch with that we're grasping at the most peripheral, temporal perception of life, which of course is engrossed in our sense of physicality, and our misperception of things that are somehow fixed in the universe. We're trying to attach ourselves to that, and consequently, really, we're terrified of that experience, because at that level, it can only be seen in dualistic terms. Something comes, something goes. One minute I have my body, the next I don't. And, you know, to disentangle ourselves from that takes enormous courage, because it is so deeply conditioned. It does represent to the unconscious mind security, when actually that's an entire facade. There's no security in it whatsoever. So truth is actually profoundly confronting, because it means you will have to accept what appears as duality absolutely as perfect. And that takes you to that place that you obliterate every attachment, every expectation. Ultimately, it leads you then to that freedom where, yes, you certainly, as the human experience, you can still have preferences, you can still indicate this vision of beingness, becomingness, beingness, becomingness. But it comes from this flow, this response to everything simply as it is. Of course, that, in some respects, that sounds like something so distant from most people's sense of life or what's even possible. And yet, if we don't have that reminder, if we don't recognize that what seems so distant is actually imminent, we're just going to continue our excuses of why we can't. Yes, yeah.
If you're in the state of oneness, there's a love of duality as well, or a recognition that duality is just the play of the divine or whatever it is, then the experience, say, of compassion for another who is suffering, who has the experience of suffering, where does that still exist?
That's a really beautiful inquiry, actually, because it really touches on the deepest essence of our humanness, because we are empathic. And I'd like to convey, first of all, that most of our perceptions or ideas about compassion do have some misnomers around them. Compassion is not sympathy, and compassion is not pity. Compassion is a presence of wisdom, a recognition of truth through the heart of love. So that means, for example, I can only talk from experience, okay, so I'll relate this to what I experience and encounter in life. I see, experience, encounter life as it is, as it's all oneness and its play of appearing duality. I embrace that in its absolute perfection and beauty and wonder. That to me, there is no conflict in that. There's no paradox in that, it just is. This is the nature of the universe, the play of the universe. And within that play of the universe, I see that there are the layers of consciousness or the layers of perception in the human experience. At the core of the human experience is that eternal awake self, which is never, ever extinguished, like an ever-burning flame. You can never, ever put it out. It's there, no matter what. Yet surrounding that are the frequencies of consciousness, the play of the soul, that is somewhat contracted. So we can call that perhaps a less conscious state or an unconscious state. That conscious state means that an individual forgets that all truth, that they themselves and all existence is all truth, all love. As a result, they experience a state of conflict, suffering in life. That is very real. That is a very direct experience. And in response of that, I see and feel that conflict and suffering. I recognize it through empathy, yet not in sympathy or pity. I see the power of that individual. And in compassion, I extend that recognition of power and truth, an embrace of love, which is actually to acknowledge the individual where they are at, in truth, authentically, that in truth this individual is here at this moment of conflict, not able to fully remember or recognize their true power. As a consequence, their behaviors, their beliefs, their actions are perpetuating suffering. So I have a deep empathy for that. At the same time, in compassion, I'm reflecting back their true nature. I'm reflecting back their true power. I see you as love. I see you as truth. And as that, I wish for you to see in truth.
So there is a desire in you of some sort.
Well, yes and no. It can seem as a desire, yet it's actually... it's not a desire, it is simply a response. It's almost like an aspect of consciousness in life is serving a role. I'm reflecting back perhaps a wider aspect of life as it is, rather than something that is narrow. And I can't but do that. So I can't but have that response. So in a sense, it's not actually a desire. It is a recognition in love that there is an unfolding occurring. And there is this continuum of beingness and becomingness. And compassion is that junction between beingness and becomingness. So there's a willingness to be that presence, or not even a willingness, it just is. Right, yeah, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's a recognition of those rhythms, it's a recognition of those variations and what we're experiencing in a human level as evolutionary, actually. So, and thank you for asking that, because, you know, I find it really fascinating to observe, like I said, the different layers of how we can even begin to understand our nature and the different dynamics that are playing out, and that ultimately what is playing out really goes beyond duality. So for me to even answer things sometimes leaves me, in a sense, in a little bit of a quandary. Because to even answer it, there's a reference of this compared to that, when
there's no difference.
No. and yet
it appears to be a duality, but it isn't.
Right. Right. And yet that which is not duality is still playing its varying aspects. It is every varying degree of vibration of consciousness simultaneously. In the same instant, it is absolutely non-differentiated. It's both.
So in that state, you can't, as it were, make a mistake. You can't move against the plan of the universe.
No. In fact, some of you might remember in the autobiography about this particular life journey, I conveyed a point when I was challenged by my family that I was adopting what seemed like a very, very strange choice in life, which was, you know, basically to renounce the usual worldly life. When I was confronted by my grandmother, I remember distinctly saying, this is a choiceless choice. This is not about a choice. This just is. How do you explain that to someone? I mean, honestly, that's what I'm... When I come back to what I'm inviting us to enter into this evening is this recognition that ultimately we have to drop that point of explanation and just drop into the experience of what we are. Then it just is. Exactly that. Everything just is. Everything is flowing as it is stillness as it is already attained as it is sequential as it is non-time as it is what appears as time as it is. It's all of it. And it's only by that innate presence in our own being that we can truly be at peace with that we can go beyond this dimension of our mind that is questioning it or trying to explain it, and we just become that state of isness. That's where we regain actually the ultimate trust in ourself, in life, in the universe. It's not going to be gained through putting your sense of trust or belief in someone else, or trust or belief in conditioned circumstances to prove that things are okay, you're on the right track or in the right place, because guess what? You are in every moment. Anyway. That's it. This is it.
If with each breath I surrendered into love, deeper and deeper and deeper into love, would this understanding just naturally appear?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things I was conveying, that actually this, what I refer to as this axis, actually is love. And so therefore, if we cultivate the intention to see with the eyes of love, to feel through the awareness of love, to respond with love, actually the more we cultivate that intention and to let into love, the greater and greater clarity we have in our awareness, the greater and greater simplicity we come into in our being, the greater alignment we have to life as it is. So actually, there's a power and a beauty in this truth, because it serves us at any perspective of our being. It serves us in the perspective where we may still see ourselves caught up in our conditions. We may still see ourselves struggling with what we perceive to be our humanness or our identity or our stories. And yet, even so, even if there is still that in you and you recognize that, honestly, you see it, all it takes is for you to simply recognize that and lovingly invite yourself to send your awareness and your perceptions through love. And the more you do, the more your so-called thoughts and perceptions are drawn into your true essence, because that's what love actually is. So from the perspective of humanness, it's beautiful because it allows you to come from that place. Like you say, you might feel those bits of you that perhaps still feel, you know, something needs to be transformed, whatever you're calling it. And you just have that intention, breathe into love. You may not feel like you've got that entire alignment or attunement, but love is going to carry you there, absolutely. And then on the other hand, when we drop all of that direction of our mind or our stories, and we just allow ourselves to drop into pure beingness, again, what are we actually reconnecting with that which really is love. Now, just to reflect a little more around love, because I know love brings up all sorts of, likewise, different perceptions and feelings or conditioned ideas. There's a lot of misunderstandings again around love. When I refer to love, I'm not talking about the sentimental self. I'm not talking about romance. Love is not something that our mind can put in a basket and say, oh, it's all sweet and beautiful and light and pure, and it's all the positive aspects of life. Love is actually the entire energy of the universe that is non-differentiated and all-inclusive. That is love. Love is that energy and power. There is nothing that is to be excluded, to be divided. It is an absolute all state of energy. So that absolute all state of energy, of course, is going to be okay with everything as it is, isn't it? Of course, is going to see in truth and trust in truth that everything is as it is in perfect order. How it happens in every moment is in perfect order. So love is utter wholeness, and that means it includes what we call this dualistic experience. What we see at the temporal level, that what appears as the coming, the going of events, we have it, we don't have it, it's all perfect. It's no longer a struggle of what's okay, what's not okay. Same as with silence. What is silence? How many people misinterpret again what is silence? It's thought of as, oh, it's an absence of noise or agitation. Actually, it's not. It is the utter inclusion of all sounds, all vibrations. Again, there is non-differentiation. That is actually silence. There's no referencing of me separate from that and a distinction of this sound compared to that sound. There's just a pure, utter state of all presence. That's omnipresence. Silence is omnipresence. Love is omnipotence. It is omnipotent. All potent. All energy. All power. So yes, with every breath, the intention to breathe into love, to be in love, absolutely that awareness arises naturally. And you know that. We all know that, don't we? That through those moments of meditation or, you know, cultivating presence, for example, in the presence, what happens when we cultivate that alignment to that essential self, and you even allow yourself to observe what you've called a problem, and you allow yourself to be purely in that state, and whatever you've called a problem, just to be there. It's just there in pure consciousness. What happens to the so-called problem? What happens? Exactly. What conflict? And those of you who have been there, what is it you have felt? Right. You have felt the power and the grace and the peace and the all-embrace of love. Now, was that something you actually had to struggle for? Was it something so out of your reach? No. So I'll go back to that point I made earlier, which is understanding that either one continues pursuing explanation, and as a result, as a consequence, you retain this sense of a rift, or you let into the experience. That's it. Yes, Yeah, can we pass the microphone back?
So I'm kind of curious about your emotional experience at your level, because I feel like it's because I have frustration that I'm able to have satisfaction. And because I get angry or sad, I'm able to be happy and excited and all those things.
Mm.
And to me, it kind of feels like if I love and accept everything and I become, if I start knowing that I am everything, there's almost a sense of boredom there for me.
Yeah.
Like almost a pointlessness in existence.
Mm. You know, it's again another really interesting inquiry, because we can look at it from the different layers or levels of human experience and perspective. And in one respect, it is what defines our whole sense of human experience. You know, that play of what appears as duality provides the contrast and therefore a sense of self, a sensory experience. Now, interestingly though, when we embrace each of those aspects rather than resist it, it's not that the vibration or the vibrancy of life vanishes and everything becomes dull. It's that it is a crystallized whole state. So there's no longer resistance or conflict between all of those expressions. It actually comes into a state of harmony. And that's actually what's referred to as bliss. People don't understand bliss. Bliss is actually a completely undifferentiated whole state of the emotive expression of self-consciousness. So it's no longer polarized and actually in conflict and perceiving through duality. So I still feel all of the varying vibrations of humanness. I don't have any rejection to it. I recognize that by having resistance and rejection to it, you actually have suffering. And do you remember one of my most quoted phrases I keep coming back to? Pain is inevitable, suffering is optional. Why? Because we're talking about the vibrations of life, the vibrations of consciousness. So, for example, I can still feel pain. If you come up and stomp on my foot, I'm going to experience the sensation of pain. However, because I don't have a projected conflict about that, something that wants to reject that vibrational experience in life, I don't suffer. I don't have a conflict around all of this vibrational experience. So I do have bliss. I do have true happiness. Not conditional happiness. I abide in a state of constant contentment, happiness, bliss. And that's what, you know, many people see just spontaneously uprising or flowing when there's just this bursting out of laughter or tears. Not because something made me laugh or something made me have tears, but because there's just this outpouring of this whole state of being. And guess what? That is a state of utter aliveness, utter thriving, utter vibrancy. There is nothing dull in that whatsoever. Nothing dull in it at all. And to be quite honest, in that attachment, at some level, that attachment to the drama, to the conflict, you fool yourself into thinking you are alive through that. But I challenge that. I don't see a truly alive, thriving humanity in that state. I've seen truly alive, thriving human beings. And it's not in that state of the drama of those polarities. It's in a state that's crystallized.
Thanks. I saw that as an assumption that I've made that I wanted to challenge in myself.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I asked the question.
Beautiful.
Thanks.
Isn't that wonderful? You wanted to challenge your own assumption. That's wonderful. Yeah. Thank you. Anything else anyone would like to share or raise? Yeah.
I think the penny's just dropped with me, the difference between resignation and acceptance. I know there's a huge difference, it feels different. But with resignation, there's a complete lack of love. There's disappointment, it's imbued with disappointment, but acceptance is surrounded by love, whereas resignation is surrounded by, yeah.
That's wonderful, that's beautiful that you've recognised that. And, you know, this is actually a really interesting point of contention in spiritual communities, that again there's often a misunderstanding in one's own personal transformation that, oh, but if I accept everything, you know, am I just giving up? Or on the other hand, mistakenly, yes, you can go into a state of resignation. And I have this little metaphor around this, that, you know, let's say, for example, you're driving along a road and suddenly you drive into a bog. It's a great big bog. And your car sinks, you scramble out of the car, you're struggling around in this bog, you're completely fighting the fact you're in a bog, and the more you fight, the more you sink. Now, the other contrast to that is, instead of fighting, you have resignation. Oh, well, I'm in a bog. Oh, well. And you sink. Now, there's a third option, which is, awareness. Ah, I'm in a bog. Okay, so I'm in a bog. There's a state of acceptance. There's also a state of response. Aware response. In that state of aware response is a buoyancy, a lightness, an equipoise, a calm, this stillness within that bog. You're floating. You're not sinking. You're not thrashing around, drowning yourself. You're just floating there. Suddenly you see a nice plank of wood just hovering nearby. And as you see that little plank of wood, you make your way to it and you walk your way out of the bog. You know, most of your life is actually like this, that you're in this fight or flight mode. Either you are in resistance and you're rejecting what you've entered into with life, just what is, or you're giving up on what life is. What we look for in terms of answers or solutions are actually always there. It's not a matter of whether you will receive the solution or receive the answer. It's a matter of whether you will accept it. Truth will always come to you. It's not a matter of whether that truth is actually right or not, or whether it will come to you or not. It is, will you accept it? That is it. And, as you rightly pointed out, that's state of acceptance is a presence of love. It is that state in your being that you can say yes to yourself and yes to what is happening in that moment. That is love. Okay, yes, here I am. A bog. And it's love that always is in that flow, the free flow, the zone, if you want to call it that, of being and becoming, being and becoming, being and becoming. Because it is all energy. And this all energy is eternal, forever present. Expressing itself through every possible dynamic. That's why we see constant renewal, that at this level or this dimension we see as physical, there is never one moment that is the same. Because that is the power of love. Yeah.
So it comes back to assumptions, then, doesn't it? Like, if I assume that the universe is, there's always a solution, then I'm automatically living in the, well, that's my reality.
I guess in a sense, and perhaps in a way, it's like faking it till you make it. You know, because in a sense, I see the assumption is kind of like faking it till you make it, that at least if you can give over this realm of your thinking to what you call this assumption or this interpretation of the universe, at least you can align yourself to it more readily. And as you align yourself to it more readily, of course you enter into that experience. Then it's no longer an assumption.
It's maybe it's like what Christ called faith. When you said that thy faith hath made thee whole, it was the assumption that you are whole that made you whole.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the ability to entertain that possibility or that truth. And like I say, that's really, it's a transition. It's the bridge between the state of one's being that is split from that awareness of truth and is entering that passage to surrender oneself again to that truth. But that's a bridge. Once you've crossed that bridge,
it just is.
It just is.
There's no need for the faith side of it. It's
right.
It is a state of faith. Or
right, or yeah. Which is why, actually, you know, the attempt to confront or challenge, for example, an enlightened being to say, well, prove it to me, is just absolutely and utterly ridiculous. Because, as I said before, there's no way the greatest enlightened being on the planet can by no means prove anything, can by no means actually explain something to the point where it is an absolute. And so, in a way, the model is allowing you to re-engage with that possibility to the degree that you enter that and become that experience. Otherwise, life will drag you there anyway.
That's inevitable.
Absolutely. Well, it is inevitable.
Whether you assume it's the truth or not, it doesn't make any difference.
No, because it is the fundamental nature of the universe anyway. Truth reveals itself. Yeah. So, you know, even in that respect, there's a wonderful reason to relax. not be so serious and, you know, so intensely worried.
There's no downside.
Ah, exactly. Only a temporary misperception that there is. Yeah.
Yeah. No losers.
No losers. There is no loss. There can't be.
You were talking about faith. I think I just got a bit interrupted when you were talking about faith. And there's a grace that it is that which we are. It's also everything. What is that?
What is that you're asking about? Grace or faith?
A sort of having faith in grace.
Faith in the power of grace. That there is this, in a sense, a reharmonizing. You know, that grace is what brings us into a deeper sense of balance and awareness and surrender and clarity. So, well, I guess I can only refer back to what I was saying, that really that faith occurs because there is at least some recognition of that possibility. And through recognizing that possibility, we have the intention and we make ourselves available to it. The moment we have that intention and make ourselves available to truth, to love, we create this openness. So grace is actually the inflow of that energy. And I guess we can call it grace because we do have a sense of a distinction between the state of our being when we're not feeling fully whole or fully in oneness, and the state of our being that is opening and regaining oneness. To me, that's really the distinction of what grace is. Because grace refers to that sense of a far greater power working in us and through us. And what is that far greater power if nothing actually but still this distinction between what we think is this contained or less aware self and that which is the all power of the universe? Energetically, what happens is when we are identified with the little self or the ego, we actually do contain our energy field. Our consciousness is very narrow and contracted, so there's actually a very little flow of energy available in us and through us. So of course it does feel like life is confined, life is a struggle. Through the intention of faith, of opening to that greater power, simultaneously we expand that space of our consciousness, we become open and reconnected to the greater flow of our being. So of course we get a sense of this other power working through us or in us or in our lives, when actually really what we're doing is re-merging with our whole self. So there's just that distinction. That's what grace is. That's my experience of grace anyway.
It is the one self.
It is the one self.
It can appear to be coming from another one self.
Sure, because there, like I said, there is still this distinction, what appears as a distinction between this little individual self and that which is actually the eternal self. They're not actually separate, yet they do have distinct variations in states and energy. Like the ocean and the drop, you know. The drop clearly is not the vibrational state of the entire ocean, is it? Yet you can't separate it. They actually are one and of the same being, right? So there's still a sense of distinction. Beloveds, let's invite a few moments together now to acknowledge this power, this presence that is here, that is ourself, that we always have available, and likewise acknowledge the ability to have very clear intention of this awareness of love in our life, that at every level we do have awareness of love, we do have the ability to invite ourselves to see through love, to feel through love, to respond through love, and to rest deeply with every breath into love. So feel yourself now with this breath, that here now you are, the universe is, life is, this all-abiding presence that is love, that is the power of oneness, the power of truth, of absoluteness. And as you breathe, you allow yourself to acknowledge this, to be open as this, to be aligned as this, to be deeply centered here now. Here now. as you breathe here now, allow yourself to acknowledge this presence that is within, that is the all. Allow yourself to recognize that in every moment, this all one self is here. The all presence of life as love, as awareness, as oneness. As this presence, there is always available the clarity, the certainty, the truth, the freedom, the peace, the wellness, the well-being of yourself and all existence, the perfection and order of everything and every moment is here within this. Gently affirm to yourself, I am the presence of love. As you affirm this, recognize your alignment in awareness with this love. Affirm your intention to see through love, to feel through love, and to respond as love. To be present within the now as love. With this affirmation and intention now, allow yourself to breathe deeply into your innermost being, recognizing this source that is here, and recognizing the grace and the power that is here as you invite yourself to be ever more present as this truth, this which is love. Breathe as you feel the flow of this gratitude through your whole being. Feel the centeredness and the openness. And in this love now, take a deep breath into your body. Gently stretch and open your eyes. Namaste. So thank you for being here and for sharing in love. Thank you for being in your life and making yourself ever more present as love.